Right, okay, this is a reflection on the modelled example we did in class earlier today. Remember that we're looking at the composing section of the ATAR exam and exploring ways in which the composing section can be addressed. The modelled example on the board was as follows. On reflection, many years later, it wasn't the end of the world moment I'd made it out to be. At the time, however, it was genuinely traumatic. The immaculate rows of desks and chairs, bookcases crammed with texts I'd probably never get to read, dominated my immediate landscape, as did my nemesis, who was propped patiently against a cupboard waiting for me. It wasn't meant to be like this. I'd imagined sailing through the choppy waters of my A-levels and leaving school in a manner which made my parents proud of me. However, here I was, with my copy of Dr. Faustus in my hand, about to be informed I was no longer a student in the school I'd known since I was 11 years old. Being told you're not good enough hurts at any age, and her words were daggers. Chucked on the academic scrap heap at 17, I trudged to the local job centre and threw myself at their mercy. And yes, it still hurts, but not as much. On the blog post, I've typed this out just in case you can't read my handwriting on the modelled example. On the modelled example, there are two sets of annotation. The first annotation is written in blue. Now, the annotations in blue are simply the comments and the decisions that I made when writing the response. Just the decisions that I made as a writer, those conscious decisions that effective writers make. The second set of annotations is in red. And now, what I've tried to do here in red is to apply the assessment criteria to the work. So, hopefully that all makes sense. Now, my first sentence, on reflection many years later, it wasn't the end of the world moment I'd made it out to be. At the time, however, it was generally traumatic. Those first two sentences, really, are trying to create drama and interest. I want my reader to ask a number of questions. They're narrative hooks. I want my reader to ask, where is the narrator of this story? Why is it traumatic? What has actually happened for this voice in this story, in this memoir, to feel that the memory was traumatic? So I'm trying to hook my reader here. The best allegory is of fishing and trying to hook your fish before you start reeling it in. So that's what I've tried to do in my first two sentences, is to really create a sense of drama, a sense of interest, to get my reader asking questions. Now, that's something you can do in your work, is to get your reader asking questions. Show your reader and don't tell them. There's a subordinate clause in the first sentence which says many years later. Now, what I've tried to do there is to signpost that I'm writing a memoir, that I'm writing about my past. The immaculate rows of desks and chairs, bookcases crammed with texts, is an attempt to establish the setting. Now, here I'm writing for a specific purpose, and I'm setting the scene without trying to be obvious. I want to show my reader the setting rather than telling them. I could have quite easily said I was standing in a classroom and the chairs were in front of me. That doesn't demand enough of the reader. By showing the reader where I am and getting them to go, oh, he's in a classroom, actually engages the reader in a little bit more detail, a little bit more sophistication. Also, the immaculate rows of desks and chairs suggests something about the person whose room it is. It suggests that they're perhaps quite controlling, that they're very precise. They like things to be in their particular place, and perhaps what I'm suggesting here is that I don't fit into that. So by describing the setting in that particular way, I'm establishing a relationship between the other person in the room and my reaction to it. I also refer to the other person in the room as my nemesis. A nemesis simply means enemy. Now, this might be a bit of hyperbole, but it suggests the relationship between the protagonist and antagonist isn't a positive one. It's exaggeration. I also describe them as being propped patiently against a cupboard waiting for me. Again, there's that anticipation. There's alliteration there, propped patiently. The verb propped suggests that they are at ease in this situation, that they're in control. It suggests that they are the dominant person in the room as well. So again, this is to do with sophisticated vocabulary, but also control of language, choosing words for a specific purpose. I then contrast that with a very short sentence. It wasn't meant to be like this. Short sentences are very good for impact. What I'm trying to do here is to create a contrast between the idealisation being at odds with the reality of the situation. I then move on to use a metaphor. I'd imagine sailing through the choppy waters of my A-levels. It's perhaps a bit clichéd, perhaps it doesn't work. It's up to you to decide whether you think that works or not. But I've decided to use a metaphor to describe school as a journey, and often schools and courses are described as a journey, and I'm just building on that particular idea. And I wanted my parents to be proud of me. Again, another alliteration use of there. However, here I was with a copy of Dr. Faustus in my hand, about to be informed I was no longer in school since I was 11 years old. Here it's that continuation of the purple of the personal voice, and really giving what had gone on before a degree of context. This is what happens. So the penny drops for the reader at this particular moment in time. Being told you're not good enough hurts at any age, and her words were daggers. Again, another metaphor. Could have said they're like daggers and turned it into a simile, but no, I've used it as a metaphor. I wanted to just build on that idea of words actually hurting. Chucked on the academic scrap heap at 17, I trudged to the local job centre. Here there's some quite interesting use of verbs for a particular effect. Chucked suggests being discarded, that it has no worth. That I'm suggesting here that I had no worth to the school that kicked me out. Chucked, discarded, thrown away. I then use the verb trudged. Trudged suggests a certain reluctance, that I'm going against my will, that I didn't want to be kicked out of school, which I didn't want to be, and threw myself at their mercy. Again, there's another bit of hyperbole there. And yes, it still hurts, but not as much. Two short sentences quickly summarise the content here. Now, if you look at the annotations, and particularly look at the annotations in red, what I've tried to do is to highlight where I've met the assessment criteria, which is also on the blog. Now, bear in mind that the assessment criteria is three strands: engagement with the topic, control of language and expression, and control of generic conventions and form. And what my modelled example does is it's competent and thoughtful, it's fluently written, there's effective vocabulary there, and there is a confident voice, and there are no errors that I'm aware of. I've controlled my conventions for a specific audience and for a specific purpose. So you can kind of see in the modelled example that I'm hitting those assessment criteria quite explicitly and quite clearly. One last thought: I don't expect you to write like me. What I expect you to get out of the modelled example is what an effective piece of writing looks like, what control of generic conventions and form looks like, and what control of language and expression looks like. Please use this as a modelled example for your own ideas and for your own thoughts, and please come and find me if this doesn't make any sense at all.